You are listening to 97.3 LPFM WRIR, and this is Open Source RVA. Today on Open Source RVA, it's the special New Year's show. We look back on the political year that was with a special panel of polls and pundits. Charles Dierdor, Paul Goldman, and Tad Williamson will join us and help us to navigate Richmond's past, present, and future. But first, here are some of the top stories making headlines right now.
For Open Source RVA, I'm Amy Daniel, and here's the news. Last week, Governor Bob McDonnell certified new regulations compelling state abortion clinics to meet strict new building construction standards. The governor had this posted to the Virginia Town Hall website the Friday between the Christmas and New Year's holidays. McDonnell's certification was not the last, but one of many steps in finalizing the regulations, which reproductive choice advocates say are unnecessary and meant solely to shut down clinics, but members of the pro-life movement, such as Governor McDonnell, assert are meant to protect women. Open Source RVA spoke with McDonnell's press secretary, Jeff Caldwell, via email about McDonnell's omission of a public announcement, for example, a news release on his website. Caldwell informed us that no press releases are sent out for the approval of regulatory changes and that this matter was handled like any other. The next step in the process of finalizing the new standards will be a 60-day period of public comment through the Virginia Town Hall website. The effort to restore Firehouse Theater Project Artistic Director Carol Pearsall to her post has gone viral with a grassroots effort by theater patrons who are casting votes of no confidence with their wallets by canceling their season tickets. Meanwhile, the board received another significant resignation on December 31st with a letter sent by Amy White, a longtime producer at the theater, announcing she was leaving as a result of Pearsall's ouster. Pearsall, one of five founders of the venerable Contemporary Theater Company, was ousted by the board December 12th, setting off an ongoing series of public protest. The latest of those, the patron uprising, began Wednesday with an email sent by Don and Lorraine Tracy, longtime patrons of the theater, who wrote to about 30 fellow theater patrons informing them of their own decision to cancel their tickets in protest. As of Wednesday night, when the Tracys provided a copy of their email to Open Source RVA, the couple said they'd received word that about 15 to 20 season subscribers had canceled their subscriptions. Meanwhile, Maury Pearsall, husband of Carol Pearsall, says that he and his wife last heard from the board regarding negotiations over if and when she might return to the theater on December 30th. Board member Hester Lewis came to their house, but Pearsall says the meeting was not productive. Board President Kay Holmes confirmed earlier this week that the board was working to reassure cast and crew members of two upcoming productions who appear set to drop out. The Virginia General Assembly will kick off this upcoming Wednesday, the second Wednesday of January, as is custom, but before that, a different, more grassroots assembly will take place. This Saturday, January 5th, the 2013 Virginia People's Assembly meets for their fifth year. The People's Assembly defines itself as a multi-issue, multi-racial network, independent of political parties, that promotes the general goals of jobs, peace, and justice, and that tries to influence the legislative process while building a united movement for fundamental economic, social, and political change. The assembly will stretch the whole day from 8:30 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. and feature networking sessions, panel discussions, and workshops. Childcare lunch and dinner will be provided. A $5 donation is suggested, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. More information can be found at vpa2013.blogspot.com. Tomorrow night, as part of the Richmond Forum, Tinseltown and history will collide at the Landmark Theater as movie director Steven Spielberg comes back to town to discuss the movie Lincoln. The feature film about America's 16th president was largely shot in and around Richmond in 2011 and has been one of the most acclaimed motion pictures released during the past year. Good luck getting a ticket to this star-studded forum discussion, however. The event, which also includes historian Doris Kearns Goodwin and screenwriter Tony Kushner, was a sold-out affair almost immediately after tickets went on sale. The star power continues on February 8th when former President Bill Clinton makes a Richmond Forum appearance to speak about embracing our common humanity. For more information on the Richmond Forum, go to richmondforum.org.
Where are we, where have we been, and where are we going? 2012 was a long, strange year, and it seems almost certain 2013 will be just as strange. But as odd as it may get around here at times, politics here is also in some ways very predictable. Which is why on today's Open Source RVA, we're going to depart from our usual interview format and dust off the cloudy crystal ball. To that end, we've invited three of Richmond's most preeminent diviners to gaze both into the murky past, giving us a sometimes no-holds-barred but certainly opinionated view of some of the biggest headlines of the past year, but also into the hazy future of our fair metro area, to make a few predictions about where the right turns and wrong turns of our immediate past might take us in 2013. Tad Williamson is an associate professor of leadership studies at University of Richmond, as well as an active and vocal civic activist who has served on various mayoral commissions over the past 4 years. Paul Goldman is a former advisor to Governor L. Douglas Wilder, an architect of our city's elected mayor law, a frequent commenter on city, state, and national goings-on, and a partner in the recently formed law firm of Morrissey and Goldman. Charlie Diridor is a local developer, a longtime Democratic Party operative, and a civic booster who made headlines a few years ago as a champion for baseball on the boulevard. He also made a flirtatious run against U.S. Representative Eric Cantor and more recently lost a close race against 2nd District City Councilman Charles Samuels, who was earlier this week installed as council's new president. Now, to oversee this fine panel, we send you over to moderator Chris Dovey, a man who knows all too well that past is prologue. Chris?
All right, I'm happy to welcome our four panelists to the show. Thad, Paul, and Charlie, thank you for being here. Guys, it's been a busy year, and we've got a lot to cover, so we're just going to go ahead and roll right in, and we're going to start with the past. Wanted to talk a little bit first about the Redskins and Bon Secours. There were some interesting hiccups in that deal. What went wrong, in your guys' opinions? What went right? Will it wash out as a winner for Richmond, or are we looking at a dog?
The numbers the numbers that were projected are not going to come in. I think the number was $7.8 million for 3 weeks. That averages out to somewhere around $2.6, $2.7 billion a week in economic impact. I don't see it happening.
So you're saying because those it's 7 or 12 practices or something along these lines that are open practices?
Right. And people think they're going to run into RG3 at the Republic. Well, they're not. You know, this thing got sold to us, and it's a bill of goods.
Well, it was a lot that was sold to us.
Quickly.
Guys, have any thoughts on it?
I think ultimately the public will be happy with it.
Why so?
You know, because the Redskins will be here, and it's like most other things. I mean, you know, they'll forget about the numbers, and sure, it won't equal the numbers that were projected. So that's like a big surprise.
But money don't buy you love, is what you're saying?
The question is, hey, the Redskins are here. It's Richmond. And I think in the end, the public will be they'll be mad if the Redskins leave after 8 years. But otherwise than that, I think they'll be happy with
that's,
it.
That's another mayor's problem, too, isn't it?
That's true.
I think it's the kind of deal that an urban politician can't refuse. If you got a major league franchise coming to your backyard to play ball, photo opportunities, continual stream of that over the next few years, you know, have Mayor Jones with RG3. You know, they'll be on the city website in July. And I don't think any, and also I'm not sure what the workings were with the governor, but certainly Virginia was part of the deal too.
$4 million.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
I've heard a lot about this being, a lot of it was trying to keep them in Lorton, up in Northern Virginia, and Richmond sort of was a key player in
the way the deal came down was this way. Okay, the Redskins agreed to put in $30 million in Loudoun County. If the governor gave him $4 million, okay. In return for all that, the Redskins promised to try to keep the training camp in Virginia. The logical place was in Richmond. The governor refused to put up any more money, but he probably gave him a nice deal on the state land. So it'll work all around. I think it's got his point. You know, net, in the end, people will be happy with it. As long as the Redskins don't leave in 8 years.
But for me at least, I'm looking at it and I'm seeing possibility of a children's hospital somewhere in that mix as a kind of a shadowy hint at the possibility of a children's hospital with the deal with the West Hampton. I've heard it mentioned as a possible location years ago. It's been mentioned again recently by Bon Secours. What do you guys think of the possibility of a children's hospital? Well, what's taking us so long to get it?
I think, first of all, I don't think the children's hospital is the issue. What I'm hearing is that the Virginia Cancer Center, is really the only game in town, along with Massey. And so Bon Secours wants a cancer center. That site is not big enough for a children's hospital. And I should say that my wife's a pediatric neurosurgeon with PAC Kids, and they're looking to build a children's hospital here in Richmond. That's not a large enough site. I think really what's going to happen is Bon Secours is going to probably open a cancer center there. So they're not playing big in the cancer arena, if you will. And Henrico is, HCA is. And of course Massey is, so they want somewhere to put their cancer center, and I'm thinking that's where they're going to do it.
I mean, I think ultimately what you're going to see is Bon Secours is going to have that whole giant block. Okay, this is just part of the ultimate over the next 30 years. They already own most of the houses on the first tier right behind, and so this is just a long process. Healthcare is going to grow. It's natural, and you know, if there wasn't any houses there, you'd say for sure. But I think that's ultimately where they're going, and they got a good deal on it, and so they took it.
Dad, any thoughts on
healthcare? I hope that well, Dan Snyder is required to make the drive southbound to Richmond on about a Friday afternoon, about leaving at 4, because we need about a few more politicians to do that to get some high-speed rail to D.C. I'd rather be linked in a more substantive way with D.C.
So you're thinking that this actually could be a benefit for us in terms of some transportation dollars coming in. Thank God that they made this deal. It's going to tick off enough people coming down from D.C.
That's a reach, but okay.
It's a reach, but that's trying to put a pig on a lipstick.
I like your reach. It's like
it's a lot of
Hail Mary.
It's a lot of pig.
All right, so City Council and Jones, I think we could probably talk about this all night, but how are they doing, you think? I mean, we've seen an era of good feelings at the beginning that sort of continued throughout. There have been a couple of little here and there's between them, but nothing all that serious. Councils have been asleep at the wheel, or are they just getting used to the soothing GPS voice of Mayor Jones?
You hear, you know, that's the sound of a rubber stamp that you hear. And, you know, he was successful in getting rid of his two probably biggest critics, Marty Jewell and Bruce Tyler. And part of the reason was they were, with all due respect, you know, more talk than action. And the mayor has basically has the 5 or 6 votes for anything that he wants, and so in that regard, I think that's what you're going to see. He's a good pal too. Give the mayor credit, you know, on the thing with Graham, Carolyn Graham, when he realized
that, and we'll get to that later.
That was going south on him. You know, he made an effort to get out in front of it, and. The mayor's, he's not an aggressive pal, but when he sees a problem, he can move fast to save his hide.
Guys?
Council, I like the rubber stamp analogy, because I think that's what's going to happen over the next 4 years. The soothing GPS voice will come down to Kathy, and Kathy will speak unto Charles, and Charles will get everything done. The interesting thing is, if you look at what happened when they handed out the council committee assignments, take a look at finance and who's on finance. The wild card in all this council stuff is Parker Agelasto.
Right.
Parker's smart. Parker's got an MBA, I believe, from UVA.
He knows numbers.
And he knows numbers. And, you know, I think that in the end, the Parker is going to stick his finger in that pie and say, now, wait a minute, this is not why. Parker seems to be a populist to me.
He's got a bit of an artist temperament, too, though.
Yeah,
he's a VMFA guy, and he's very much interested in cultural aspects of the
community. I'll give Parker
well.
All the credit in the world. I went to a meeting about the water rates issue, which I hope we bring up at one point or another in this discussion. And Parker was there. It was a DPU. He had not been sworn in. It was a couple of weeks ago, and there he is listening.
You know, I happen to know. I think he was at two other meetings that same night. In fact, mm-hmm. maybe during the same hour. Yeah, I don't know how he does that.
I think Parker is really going to be a force to be reckoned with within about. You got to give him a year. You got to give all the new guys, new people a year. But, you know, 2 years from now, people are going to be listening to Parker because Parker's going to have something to say.
Now, Paul just gave Mayor Jones credit, I think. It sounded like credit for engineering the removal, so to speak, of Bruce and Marty.
He went on a direct mail piece for Parker. Yeah.
So, I mean, how instrumental was he really in that? I mean, certainly that direct mail piece was pretty, pretty important.
That was very late in the game, though. And I've talked with Parker about this, and Mayor Jones was the last piece on top of a whole bunch of door knocking.
Yeah, but Mayor Jones got him the Democratic Party nomination, and without the Democratic Party nomination, he doesn't win. And so he controls the Democratic Party, and a lot of that stuff is how it came down. And I think it's.
Well, it didn't work in the eighth, though, did it?
It's not going to work everywhere. Nothing ever works everywhere. But hey, he wasn't so much interested in defeating Riva. He wanted to get Dawn Page to run so he'd open up the seat for his son.
Of course.
So, and he got that.
How instrumental do you think the mayor was, though, raising the larger question, in some of the other races in town? I mean, there was a lot of school board overturn and tumult. And then
look at who was his critics on the school board, his biggest critics? Maurice Henderson, number one. He lost. They went after Maurice Henderson
by about
strong.
70%.
And Norma Murdoch-Kitt was his other one.
Yep.
The mayor had his deputy chief of staff run against her. So, I mean, anybody who doesn't think the mayor has been trying to consolidate his power and using what I, you know, it's sort of a vacuum in Richmond. Everybody sort of suffers from the chloroform of conformity. And you know, it's just not seeing the true political picture. That's just the way it is. Again, you're not going to see, it's not going to be necessarily a situation where it's so self-evident. It's going to be a lot of things that you don't see.
There has been some positive move forward for the city. Is a little chloroform, it smells nice, but it makes you drowsy. Are we going to wake up to some good things? Or
what, like what?
I don't know.
You're the one who brought it up. I mean, what good things have been happening in the city?
Well, we've seen the Redskins, the bike race.
You assume
coming.
That's a good thing?
We're assuming it's a good thing.
The bike race is going to cost us
a lot
of money.
The bike race is a loser from the word go.
Big loser.
Nobody in the world, on the globe, would take the bike race, but we did. Hello. Anybody want to tell me why?
Anybody coming?
We'll see.
There's going to be a big rollout of the anti-poverty stuff in the next month or so. It's related to you talking about Dr. Graham before, but the time is finally here for that to come to some fruition and hopefully affect the agenda.
And in fact, I guess going to get to that as a different topic, but yeah, that seems to be something where the mayor has been very strong in talking both about that as well as transportation issues, I guess, for public transportation issues to create methods for people to get back and forth to jobs, access to jobs. Has he been good or bad on those? It sounds like...
Well, I mean, there are five big things that on the agenda in terms of poverty. One is education, and that's obviously a separate thing. The second is the public housing redevelopment and whether they can clear the decks for the Blackwell projects so they can get federal funding in to carry out a meaningful redevelopment somewhere.
And they have some money left over there for that Blackwell project, I understand. I mean, there's some money sitting in a pot waiting to be spent already.
Yeah, my understanding is that they have some issues to take care of before the federal government is going to be willing to issue new money for another redevelopment project. But that process is in motion. And I think with Adrian Goolsbee, you actually have someone the residents, at least so far, actually like and trust, which is an accomplishment in itself, right? Then the next piece is workforce development and linking economic development to poverty in a more direct way that's been done in the past. And they have Jameson Mannion in there who's doing some great work on workforce development, has a really good program that could be ratcheted up. But then the big two things, one statewide, Medicaid expansion, that's huge. It probably dwarfs everything else in scale. And I think that has to be a big fight at the state level, and the Democrats need to go all out on that. And the other thing is transit. And I mean, the fact that Samuels mentioned that in his little speech yesterday. I was sort of taken by that he just put it out there was in his little 2 minutes the priorities that, you know, actually after he was saying some nice things, we're not going to fight with our neighbors, but then going on and say, no, we're going to get transit. And that would be a big deal. And that's the whole point of having a strong mayor or whatever you want to call it, is to take the lead on something like that. So we'll see if it happens in an effective way.
So you bring up Carolyn Graham, and maybe you can answer a little bit of this, and then we'll move on to the political side of it. And I don't know that you can answer the political side, Thad, but with Carolyn Graham and what's going on with her removal, her ouster, does that damage any of that moving forward?
Not if the administration picks it up, because the work had already been done. You know, she was shepherding the process, but the work of the commission had been done. It just simply hadn't gotten out the door. But they realize that, and they're going to be taking it, pushing out the door in the next few weeks. So actually, it may accelerate things, because now that the mayors and the staff realize they have to take direct responsibility for what's going on.
So it may have flushed the entire system and maybe make some things happen.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Well, and on the Carolyn Graham issue, so now she's come to town at the behest of Mayor Jones, handpicked CEO, Byron Marshall, who again has a D.C. connection. She has the D.C. connection. As the dust settles around this whole social services scandal, and I guess the social services director was another D.C. handpicked person, somebody who's from the same pedigree. Graham going away now, and some of this stuff is starting to come to light. But at the same time, it seems like the dust is also settling a little bit in a way that maybe Jones has avoided the worst of it. Maybe too. His CAO has avoided the worst of it. Do we think we're going to see this come back up at all? Or might see somebody taking a second look at the involvement of D.C., former Marion Barry crowd in Richmond? Or?
Well, they would have done that with Harry Black. They never did that.
Or any additional political outfall for the mayor.
I mean, why? That's something I've never understood. I know we used to have a AAA baseball team here, but why are we the AAA farm team for Washington, D.C. politicians? That's what I don't get.
They do come. I mean,
yeah,
Harry Black
show
was certainly
up
one.
In droves, man. But, you know, look, I think the timing of the Carolyn, and Paul, you might agree with me on this, the timing of the Carolyn Graham problem was perfect because it was right where it needed to be.
Right after the election?
Right after the election. And for it to be right after the election made it, you know, it was the beginning of it. You know, holidays were here. People weren't really paying attention. And it just went away.
Well, I would say a couple of things. It was helpful for Charles Samuels. It helped to raise his profile while he's running for
that's agreed.
For city council president. So I mean, it helped him, I think, a lot more than people appreciated. Number two, you know, it's certainly a forest fire of smoke. But, you know, if I'm Smokey the Bear, I'm still looking for just where's the fire. And
turning over dirt and it's
and,
just smoldering.
You know, it's I don't know. So it's a scandal in search of a scandal.
Yep.
And that's one reason that it's not gonna. It didn't matter that much then. The mayor moved quickly enough, and it won't matter much now. Also, let's realize, you know, people sort of expect these things to kind of happen. And the old expression is nobody died, and
here maybe some people were.
If they could show it, there was rumors, there were talk, all this kinds of stuff. You know, what a child go into the emergency room 22 times before somebody called. That strikes me as a pretty amazing statistic if it were true.
For once, privacy laws may have worked in favor of the. Public entity
well, the
under
thing
attack.
Is, you know, again, there was too much smoke, and if there's fire, it's long gone. So I don't see this as being an ongoing political problem.
It won't come back up. So it won't. Who would bring it back up? Michael Herring? I don't think so. So.
Enough said on that one. School board elections. So we saw some major changes there. I guess we talked a little bit about this. Brandon, what do you think her chances are as we roll into the new year?
That's certainly a good question. A lot depends on the mayor.
And here, of course, for the listener, if they've not been listening to anything having to do with schools, Yvonne Brand being our superintendent of schools.
Look, the initial situation for the schools is going to be the budget. I mean, that's just the way the thing comes down. The school system. What's interesting is this, and it hasn't been done this way in the last couple of years. By law, the school board and the school administration are supposed to propose the budget that they think is necessary to provide the education that the kids need. That's really not what's been done recently. Although a little bit last time, they've tried to gauge how much money they think they can get, and then they try to sort of propose a budget that they, okay. That's changed dramatically. And, you know, right now the city's portion of the school budget, or the school budget's portion of the general fund, is the lowest it's been since segregation.
19.6%.
And so
there's that number.
It's a very interesting sort of situation. But the rumor is the school budget has got a $17 million hole. Now, no, I don't know what that means exactly, because you got to know expenses and revenues. If that's true, if they have to cover $17 million, that's going to be a defining moment for this new school board, particularly since it's headed by the mayor's former chief of staff.
So what does that do to the mayor's former chief of staff?
Well, as I say,
who now works for RRHA. Let's make that clear.
Well, that's true, but the mayor got him that job. I mean, let's give the public a little credit. And so, bottom line, it seems to me that it remains to be seen. Look, the mayor was successful in getting his critics off the board. The public reacted and threw every incumbent who was running out by big numbers. They wanted,
except Kim Gray, who won 70% of the
vote. Who was essentially the anti-board candidate anyway, was the one lone vote against the board. The public said, we want some big changes. The school budget's going to be the first way to see where that
comes. Now, I do want to ask you guys.
But Paul, let me ask you something. Did the public really say what they wanted, or was the public sold on who they think they wanted due to the city Democratic Committee endorsement process?
Criticizing the Richmond Public Schools is just the easiest game in town, right? And criticizing, you know, or saying there's a problem with the schools, we need to do better. Everybody agrees with that. But I want to know, what is the philosophy of the new board? And that is, to me, totally unclear. And so, you know, whether changing superintendent is a good idea or not depends to me totally on whether the intent is to do an upgraded version of basically the same thing with someone that they like better, in which case I don't see the point. Or if the idea is to go in a completely different direction in terms of pedagogy and in terms of moving to giving individual schools more autonomy, something along those lines, then you could say, okay, you know, maybe it makes sense all around to get a new person there. But they have to flesh out what the philosophy is going to be. I don't think anyone has any idea what that is. I don't think it's been publicly discussed.
Well, getting into the Uber recent current events, I mean, we've had this week the election of the chair, and there was quite a bit of controversy leading into that, because I think there was a general consensus with the public that it was going to be Kim Gray. Do you think that that might have any sort of lingering?
Let's go through how the thing developed.
Sure.
Okay. The mayor had been pretty well supportive of the status quo in education. He had been chairman of the school board for years, and even him had conceded that he had supported the status quo. What happened was is that the mayor, back last year, roughly this time, went to the old school board and said, look, this is all the money I want to give you. And normally they had gone along the last couple of years.
We'll spend that money, thank you very much.
Right. This time they said, no, we want more. They gave a budget which was like $19 million more than the mayor wanted. He sent his aides back again. Said, no, you don't quite understand. You're not getting $19 million more. The school board said, sorry, we want the $19 million. Now, then the mayor gave his speeches attacking the school board, criticizing indirectly Brandon for the first time, put up his own committee. That is what got it on the front page. Then they had that big story when he criticized Dawn Page, even though that was his person. Okay, and so what happened? For the first time, the mayor got it on the front page, It's easy.
Well, but Paul, let me stop you real quick, because you're talking about the first time the mayor got it on the front page. But for the last 4 years, Kim Gray has been getting it on the front page.
Is that the same thing anyway?
No, I disagree with you. She hadn't gotten it on the front page. It only got on the front page until the mayor said something about
it. And that started basically the revolt. And you're absolutely correct. The people were pretty much saying, you know, anything's better than what we got. And so they elected a whole bunch of people who ran on generalities on I can do better. But hey, John F. Kennedy got elected president on we can do better. That's sort of basically how things work. And yeah, now with the new budget, they get a chance to decide what in fact their philosophy is going to be.
Yeah, but understand their philosophy is going to be derived from who got them elected.
Conceivably, but I'm willing to keep an open mind on that.
Yeah, sure. I think it's an interesting debate. I think it could be an opportunity, but it has to be a wide open debate. I mean, there is no clear cut, obvious answer to the problems of urban education. There's only experimentation and trial and error. You got to stake out a clear direction or a multitude of directions, and then say we're going to go at it. I am worried about a model of more centralized control. You know, I think the whole regime of test scores and all that, that's done on a national level. And I hope everyone in Richmond has caught up with that. That just doesn't work.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion on the year that was, including our lightning round of 2013 predictions. You are listening to 97.3 LPFM WRIR, and this is Open Source RVA.
WRIR's programming is generously supported by the Richmond office of the law firm of Kaufman & Knowles. Kaufman & Knowles, Richmond lawyers serving the needs of Richmond business. For further information, 804-771-5715 or www.kaufmanandknowles.com. Broadcast of WRIR is made possible in part by VCU Arts, a nationally ranked program featuring 16 visual, design, and performing arts departments, and a campus in Qatar, arts.vcu.edu.
We're back with our panel discussion featuring Charlie Deardorff, Paul Goldman, and Thad Williamson. Your moderator is Chris Dovey.
One word question now. Cantor. Go.
Speaker next year.
He's already a speaker.
That was your one word.
Yeah, that was my one word. I was trying to think of something nice, and I failed, you know.
All right. Well, again, everybody, you're listening to WRIR. We're here with our panel of experts on both the future and the past, Thad Williamson, Paul Goldman, and Charlie Deardorff. Next up, we're going to be talking a little bit about our listener predictions. So let's roll into that real quick here. We've had a couple of five, six interesting ideas come in from listeners, predicting what they think we'll maybe be seeing in some headlines in the coming year. This one, Charlie Bazell. The Democrats will run Terry McAuliffe for governor, then marvel that someone like Cuccinelli could win an election. Any thoughts on that, guys?
You look at the polls. It's anybody's race right now. Cuccinelli is probably more ideologically rigid than any governor in the history of the state, and so I think that's a problem for him. But
except Harry Byrd, maybe.
Well, but no, those guys back then. As long as you were basically anti-black and anti-labor, and maybe you got to be anti-Jewish or Catholic on occasion, you were cool. But you know, it's. Cuccinelli is a conservative a couple of degrees more than, say, a McDonald or a Gilmore or an Allen.
A couple, Paul?
Yeah, let me put it this way. If you had put Ollie North's record on 100, position on 100 issues in 1994, 96, and John Warner's, you might not find 5 out of the 100 where they disagreed. The fact of the matter is so much of this is optics. So much of this is knowing style and substance. You know, McDonald and Cuccinelli don't disagree on that much, but their style is so much different.
True.
And you've got to recognize that fact. Cuccinelli has been elected statewide, And you could say, well...
Well, he's been pretty polarizing. Is McAuliffe an opportunity for him that he wouldn't otherwise maybe have had if there were a stronger Democratic candidate?
Let me tell you something. The opposition research is ongoing right now, has been going on for a while, and they are going to bring stuff up on Terry McAuliffe from years ago and from yesterday. And they're going to say, look at us, we're not so bad. And that's what worries me about Terry. I like Terry, and I think that he'd make a great governor because he's business-minded. He's that 90s DLC corporatist Democrat reminds me to the world for the guy he worked for a long time. Forget his name. Yeah, Clinton. And so I like that, but I think that his past dealings and specifically his dealings with Haley Barbour are going to come back to get him.
Well, Thad, so...
Well, why isn't there, I ask you guys, why isn't there a credible alternative to McAuliffe among Democrats?
Well, I mean, you know...
Jim Webb doesn't want to do it.
That was an interesting pause.
I mean, Jim, there's been talk in the past several days about Jim Webb, but Jim Webb doesn't want to do it. Who else is out there? And that's part of the problem with the state Democratic Party. The Republican Party in this state has always maintained a bench. Always. They've got people running for dog catcher, getting ready to run for city council, getting ready to run for school board, getting ready to run for, okay? We don't. I shouldn't say we, but I'm a Democrat, so it is we. We don't seem to be creating that bench. And so who else is there?
I want to know, why isn't there a bench? There is nobody credible that I know of.
There are other people. I mean, one of the difficulties you have here, this is not unlike 2001, 1997, the Republicans won all three statewide offices. Historically, the governor has come from the attorney general or he's come from the lieutenant governor. That's historically how it's worked. Warner was a businessman, had a lot of money, had a lot of interest, so he was able to run.
Well,
Terry is sort of like that.
To wrap it up, or Mr. Bazell's prediction, are we going to be inaugurating a Governor Cuccinelli or a Governor McAuliffe?
I'd say Terry has the edge right now.
I'd agree with that, just from the inclusiveness aspect.
McAuliffe.
Yeah.
All right, next one is Active RVA says that Redskins training camp is going to cause an enormous parking problem. Everyone will wonder why council scrambled to give away valuable real estate to make it all happen. Sounds like that's one we've dealt with a little bit already, but you think we'll be questioning that? Paul, you've said no.
I think people will be happy with it.
Overall, Charlie.
I just don't see that people are going to be happy with it in the end because of the traffic, because of the high expectations that aren't going to be met.
Thad, are we going to be happy? We've got some really nice ball fields over there.
Moderately happy. A few people will be upset.
All right, next one's from Scott Berger, who loves to write very, very long predictions, so we've shortened it a little bit. The city is going to lower the minimum residential water rate, but the question is, and this is where I paraphrase, by how much, and will that relief be only for a few low-income folks and not for the middle income?
I think that the water rate will be reduced. I was at that meeting. I heard DPU talk about that. They're looking at different models. I'm not willing to go as far as Scott is. I don't know. I mean, I'll be quite honest.
And politically, they have to reduce the water rate some. But as I've pointed out, there's a provision of the city charter which basically raises everybody's water rates by $200 a year. And until that is dealt with, they have a perfect excuse to keep the water rates much higher than they were ought to be. I think it's unconstitutional. I think a good case can be made that that provision of the city charter violates the state constitution and several state laws, but I'm not sure anybody's willing to challenge it.
So this year we may not see a fix. All right, Thad, what do you think?
I think there'll be a fix. Scott's done a great job on the issue, and I think the support for it's pretty overwhelming.
I don't think they can't do a fix because to fix the water rates...
You already had yours.
Okay, well, to fix the problem leaves a $16 million hole in the city budget.
The key term there, and I'm going to string this out just a little bit because it's a very important issue to a lot of people.
It most certainly is.
I hope you don't mind, but define fix. That's the problem. How do you define fix? They're going to put a Band-Aid on the problem. They're going to make people feel good about what they did with it. But are they going to fix it? I don't think they're going to fix it because of what Paul said.
So you think they'll fix it, Thad, still? You think they're going to be able to find a way to make it revenue neutral?
They're going to do something, whether it's good enough. I mean, Scott won't be happy. I'll predict that much.
Now, that's a good prediction.
You're going out on a limb there, boss. All right. Erica Gray writes, she says, Virginia keeps the ban on uranium mining because that's not worth the risks. Now we're heading off into the Southwest Virginia territories here. What do you guys think?
Paul, go ahead.
There'll be no uranium mining. And the only question is going to be, you know, I think McAuliffe's got to come out against it sooner rather than later. I think he's already should be out against it. Let's look at the politics of it. Virginia Beach is dead set against uranium mining. They got a few votes. It's the biggest part, and they're dead set against it. There's absolutely no reason for anybody running for office statewide to be for uranium mining.
Bad?
I think that's right. I agree with Paul. It's not going to happen.
Uranium mining's a dead issue. It'll play around a little bit in the GA, but it won't happen.
All right, a couple of lightning round questions. These are not from listeners. Just some headline things that have come up over the past year that get a thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. All right, whatever you want to do, but don't waver too much on these.
Can I suggest we buy sell?
Sure, we can buy sell on.
All right.
All right. With all the sesquicentennial hype, did Richmond experience a history boom in 2012? Thad?
Yes.
No.
Paul? No.
Sell.
All right. Next one, reopening Norrell School. Good idea or bad idea? Thad?
Bad.
Very bad.
Bad.
Did Barack Obama kill Bill's barbecue?
No.
It was going anyway.
Are you kidding me? That's my answer. Are you kidding me?
All right, next one up. Ralph White retiring. Is our river safe?
Well, Dad? People will still drown. You know, they've been drowning every year. That won't change.
So the river will remain dangerous if you go in without a life preserver.
If you're an idiot, it will remain
interesting
dangerous.
Interpretation of the question. Paul?
If Ralph retires, it's less safe.
I want it on the record that Thad used the word idiot in relation to people from the city of Richmond. I would never do that. No.
I was referring only to people from outside Richmond who aren't experienced and, you know, come in and use the water without reading the signs.
We don't know our river.
His retirement is a terrible thing for the people and for the river.
So that one's a sell for you.
Yeah, sell.
All right. Richmond, bike town, Thad?
Too many friends that got hit. So
Not yet.
Paul? It's getting there,
but still there's not enough. We need the mayor needs to cut PSAs and put PSAs on the air on stations like WRIR. People don't care about bicyclists in the city.
Charlie not ready to commit, and of course the bike race is going to be a bomb as well.
Oh, it's going to be terrible.
All right. Art 180 controversy. What did that tell us? And this one is not a buy sell. This has got a little bit more.
I'll go. The Art 180 controversy was not a controversy. The Art 180, and I, all
what
cards on the table, all
ourselves.
Cards on the table, I live on Monument Avenue, okay? They filed for the paperwork. They got the paperwork. They put the art up there, and there were several people on Monument Avenue and several wealthy individuals in Richmond who said, "My God, what is that doing on Monument Avenue?" It was a terrible black eye for this city that was turned into a great moment for this city by the people who live on Monument Avenue that put those pieces of art. Monument Avenue is Richmond's front yard, and it was the best thing in the world to see all those people walking up and down Monument Avenue supporting those kids.
Boil it down, Charlie. What did it tell us about ourselves?
It told us that we often listen to the moneyed interests of this city rather than do what's right.
And I think it, you know, was a fight between the old Richmond and new Richmond. I don't think the old Richmond really appreciates the arts community. The arts community is really key to the future of Richmond. And I think in the end, people sort of realize that. So I think in the end, it's going to be a big help moving the city forward, the whole controversy.
I agree with that. I think there's sort of a strange analogy between this and the women's rights issue earlier. Is one of these things that's happened and people are like, oh my goodness, what kind of state I'm living in? I don't want to be here. I want a different place. So I think the backlash was far more powerful and ultimately a positive thing.
So maybe we make it a better place is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So it's okay. All right. So
may I add one thing to that?
Go.
This city has not done what it was supposed to do after that flare up, which is create a public art space It's got a commission. The city has a commission on this, but no one has really done anything about it since that. We live from chapter to chapter, moment to moment in this city, and we've got to stop doing
that. So, City Council, Mayor Jones, Charlie just put you on notice. Where is our public art space? All right, next one up. Did you see Lincoln, and did you like it? Thad?
Yes, I liked it.
Haven't seen it yet.
Yes, great movie.
All right, so we got a winner there. Warren Buffett buying the Times-Dispatch, good thing?
Not yet.
Not going to matter.
Not going to matter.
They did print his op-ed, which they wouldn't have otherwise. So, on promoting a wealth tax. So,
there we go. All right.
They had to.
Yeah.
All right. Would you like to see the term Tier 1 city retired or put on a T-shirt that somebody has to wear a whole lot?
I want to see it retired. We're not a Tier 1 city. New York, Boston, L.A., they're Tier 1 cities. We're a Tier 2 city, and we should strive to be one of the best Tier 2 cities in the country.
Trail of Tears, right?
I think they should serenade the mayor with a Tier 1 city every day while he's in office.
Thad, what do you think?
I don't know what to think, but it may be time to find a new term. What's the term for the best 200,000 person city? Is there a term for that?
Nice town.
Charleston.
Nice town. Yeah. All right, Superintendent Yvonne Brennan, star pupil or a pass to the principal's office? Let's hear it, guys. Nobody is. Come
on,
Charlie.
Did you say pass or passed?
Heading to the principal's office. How's that?
Oh, she's teacher's pet.
I think she might be on the way out.
Ooh.
Thad?
It comes down to, do they have a coherent philosophy about what they're trying to do? I think her performance, it's, in line with expectations. The question is, have the expectations changed?
So thumbs up, thumbs down? Where are you sending her?
Middle, I don't know.
Thumb to the middle, all right. Yeah. Chief Brian Norwood, home team hero or traded to the Arena League?
Brian Norwood is liked very much by the rank-and-file cops, but he is gone.
Ouch, ouch, ouch. Paul?
Yeah, I think he's got his blue slip.
I've not heard anything positive about him from a while from the people up top, so that would be a concern.
So the folks up at the top are going to make the decision, Thad, is what you're saying. They tend to, don't they?
Don't they always?
Tend to.
All right. Let's move on to the future, I guess. And again, we're listening to WRIR Open Source, and we're talking with our panel of futurists, talking a little bit about what we might be seeing in 2013. And we really are going to talk a little bit about the future now. The first one I'd like to ask about, and it's one that we dealt a little bit with in the past, I guess, was the poverty and transportation issue that's been championed by Mayor Jones. How far do you think we're going to get into that issue for 2012 or 2013? We're in 2013, aren't we? Wow. Thad, you've been deeply involved in this issue. Do you see it moving forward in a giant step in 2013, or are we going to be baby steps in 2013 towards maybe bigger things later on?
Well, it has to be fairly giant steps in terms of it has to begin a regional conversation. And, I think there's consensus among the politicians living in Richmond that this is important. And, the report will demonstrate the links between transit and employment and how certain neighborhoods in Richmond are being terribly disadvantaged by inability to access entry-level jobs in suburban communities. And also that will make the case that the counties have a lot to gain from this as well. So I think it's really at the level of, can you move enough business support regionally to really get things going? Because the people at the Regional Planning Commission, they recognize, people look at Richmond compared to other regional areas, and it's just obvious. This is embarrassing.
It's been a major issue for the Regional Planning District, right? I mean, they're talking about it quite a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a matter of if you can find that champion, both within the suburban communities to at least provide political cover for it and some businesses stepping up and saying we need this.
Do you see a champion in the suburbs? Who might that be?
Well, you got two votes for sure in Henrico, right? So, with Virgil leaving and the changes there, I think there's openness to a conversation about that. I think Gecker in Chesterfield is a potential champion.
Dan Gecker.
Yeah.
And you're talking from Henrico, you're talking the Verina district and the Fairfield district.
Right, right.
So do you think that Tyrone Nelson might step up as a true voice for that? Somebody who's going to carry the...
Well, yeah, he has to see there's a chance of success. But yes, I would expect that.
Paul? Any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a breakthrough on that particular issue in the next 12 months. They may have to throw some. There's some financial issues, and the city might be, if it really wants to be successful, might try to figure out a way that it can maybe sweeten the pot, make it a little better. But I think that's a holdover issue. I think it's sort of been something that should have been changed for a while. You really can't justify the current situation. So I think they're going to be a breakthrough. In terms of the other areas, you know, I would be surprised if there's a breakthrough, but I could see some.
And the other areas you're talking about, the regional partners?
Well, you know, it's a tough issue when you talk about you said about poverty and transit. Transit, I can see a breakthrough. Poverty is such a complex issue that, a breakthrough would be, that's kind of hard to see.
Transportation, I see large steps being taken this year. Regionalism, you said regional partners. We don't have regional partners yet. I'm hoping that gets fostered. The question I have for Thad is this. How do we make steps in the next 12 months with Henrico County and Gecker, Chesterfield County? We focused on him earlier. How do we do that with Henrico with a brand new executive in Henrico? Doesn't he need 12 months to get his feet underneath him? Although he has been, and I'll grant you, a great understudy to Virgil.
Well, he's heard a presentation on transit already, at least one. He heard one I gave at the West Richmond Rotaries. I'm focusing more on
poverty.
Well, first of all, you have to understand there's poverty in Henrico County, too. That's the first argument to make. Yeah. The second is you argue that this could be a more efficient regional labor market. It'll be better for the employers to have access to a wider range of employees and also a wider range of consumers. The third thing, and it probably will not start off this way, but the vision long term is more of a bus rapid transit model. So it's not going to be big, huge buses clogging up Broad Street all the way out the short pump. It's going to be something nice and pleasant that middle class people are going to want to use, and that's what's going to make it financially sustainable and politically viable. It may start off at the initial stages is running some buses farther than they are now, but the long-term vision is to get something that you can
down the middle of Broad Street,
a short pump in 15 or 20 minutes, and it's a pleasant ride, and there's Wi-Fi. And
this is the idea of the BRT. This is it would be basically almost sort of like a trolley sort of system that would run up and down the middle of Broad Street. They were looking for a transportation grant. Actually, would go to Rockets to jump down and go down Main Street. An interesting idea, and it's been sort of hanging out there for a while, and so you're saying you think that we might see some money breakthrough on that?
Well, there's federal money available, and I think that the localities will have to commit some too.
All right, and back to John Patulkas, that is the new county manager in Henrico County. Interesting guy. He started his career in Chesterfield. He's lived most of his, adult life kind of near the city, hugging near the West Hampton area. So he's pretty familiar with city life. I organize Hamaganza every year, which is a benefit concert that involves Dirt Woman. I've seen him sit in Dirt Woman's lap for a photo. So he's not immune to...
Did you really just have to say that?
I did. I did need to say that. And he's a great guy, and he's very much, into being part of culture, and he's a young guy,
but does he have the chops to do what he needs to do in the next 12 months?
He knows finance.
That was the original question.
And that is the question. That's what I was going to ask, is do you think that he might be somebody, what was his reaction, I suppose, when you gave this presentation on what is traditionally thought of as an urban issue, but that has become something of a suburban issue?
Well, this is where it's actually tricky for Mayor Jones, and probably for anyone in the city, is I think they are interested in making steps forward, but they just won't be blamed. That they don't want to be you bad suburbs. So there has to be a way, and I think a historian, academic, he could plant all kinds of blame, but they just don't want the story, they don't want the lead story to be, and Henrico has been a bad neighbor for 30 years. If you leave with that, you lose. So you have to find a different way to frame it, about talking about mutual gains. And I think there's plenty of arguments you can marshal to make that. And I think that's what will give him cover.
So maybe see John being a partner in that.
Yeah. I think the door is definitely open.
It's interesting.
To walk through.
All right. One last thing, and then we're out of here. Summary. We went with your predictions for what's going to be our big headline next year. Let's start with Charlie. What are we going to see as the giant headline, banner headline next year?
The fight over the budget for the schools is going to envelop the city, and it is going to be a major story for a number of weeks, if not months.
Paul?
That's an interesting thing. You know, the school budget, you know, could that be the number one issue? I'm thinking that you could very well get a scandal somewhere. You know, we haven't had a big scandal in a while. I'm going to say we're going to see a scandal. I'm not exactly saying about what, but I think you're going to wake up one morning and with a headline and say, my goodness.
So you smell Los Federales, all right? And
do you somewhere in the midst, or in the mist, I should say, see the figure 700,000 in that scandal?
No, I'm not sure. I just think that, that's going to happen.
All right, Thad?
Well, hopefully the city will embrace the anti-poverty agenda. That's a big hope. I agree the school budget will be a big fight. But, you know, these are times of austerity until the economy gets rolling again, if it ever does. This is what all cities face. It's sort of become a fact of life. But I think a year from now, what happens with the new jail and whether their incarceration alternatives are actually in place is a huge story. And I think the governor's race is the biggest story of 2013, because that's going to probably determine what happens with Medicaid and a lot of other things.
All right. And that is our crystal ball gazing for 2013. Thank you guys for coming in. Again, we've got Charlie Diridor.
Thank you.
Paul Goldman and Thad Williamson. Happy 2013.
Happy 2013, Chris.
All right. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for coming in.
That's Open Source RVA for January 4th, 2013. I'm Amy Daniel, and my co-hosts are Chris Dovey, Don Harrison, and Mike McKenzie. Our producers are Jay Westerman and the vacationing Gabby Schatzi, and our board op today is Absolutely Al. Want to start the new year right? Send us a news tip at opensourcerva@gmail.com. If you're feeling nostalgic for 2012, why not visit our website at rvaopensource.com and get the links to previous podcasts of the show. Be sure to tune in to next week's episode when we will look back on the local arts and music of the past year. Until then, don't forget to order a side of Sourcey Sauce. Nobody's gonna look at you in the year 55. Your arms are hanging limp at your side. Your legs got nothing to do. Some machine doing that for you. In the year 65. Ain't gonna need no husband, won't need no wife. You pick your son, pick your daughter too. From the bottom of a long glass tube, whoa, whoa. In the year 7510, if God's a-coming, he ought to make it by then. Maybe he'll look around himself and say, guess it's time for the judgment day. In the year 8510, God is gonna shake his mighty head. He'll either say I'm pleased where man has been, or tear it down and start again. Whoa, whoa. In the year 95, I'm kinda wondering if man is gonna be alive. He's taken everything this old earth can give, and he ain't put back nothing. Whoa, whoa. Now it's been 10,000 years. Man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through, but through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday. In the year 2525.